Hello, this is Tom Campbell, host of a series of interviews with local band members and music industry professionals from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. Today's interview is with Art Dean and Bob Johnston from The Sensations. Hello, this is Tom Campbell. Today is November 10th, 2012, and I'm talking with two members of The Sensations, Bob Johnston and Art Dean. Guys, if you wouldn't mind, could you please give me your full name, date of birth, and hometown?
Bob Johnston, with a T, August 22nd, 1947, grew up in Robbinsdale.
Art?
Arthur Richard Dean, the second, actually, born August 28th, 1947, Robbinsdale High School as well, born in Princeton, Minnesota.
What part of town did you guys grow up in?
South Minneapolis originally, and then we moved out to the Robbinsdale Crystal area in 1957. I was out there from then on, graduated Robbinsdale High School in 65.
I grew up in Robbinsdale and didn't leave Robbinsdale until after I went in the Army and got married.
Okay, and you also are a graduate of Robbinsdale High?
I am, same year.
Same year.
65.
Okay. What was going on in the early to mid-1960s when you guys were in high school as far as local music? Had you been out to see local bands?
Absolutely. It started the bands coming into your high school first. The Enderbeats would come in, the Trashmen came in and played primarily because they had also members who were Robbinsdale graduates or Robbinsdale students or lived in the Robbinsdale area. Then some of the local bands, Robbinsdale bands, started playing at Ryan's Ballroom, so we go out there. And then I think maybe the biggest move was in 1964, fall, maybe 65, early 65, when a good friend of mine, Steve Miller, got the job with the Del Counts. And I remember him showing up and saying that he's going to be playing at the Marigold Ballroom this Friday night. Of course, we go down. That's the first time we met Marsh Edelstein, Marsh Production, down at the Marigold Ballroom, went down to see him play. And I think that opened up a whole world, because all of a sudden, instead of just going out to Ryan's and these other places, all of a sudden we're going to Mr. Lucky's and seeing some of the other groups, going to some of the different dance places, and there were just endless places to go on a weekend. You could not have hit every place. There was not enough time on a Friday night to hit every dance place and see every band.
And Steve Miller had been in another band prior to the Del Counts?
Steve started playing with, I think it was the Torquays, or maybe the Coachmen. Might have been the Coachmen before the Torquays, but I think the Torquays were the first. When he was, I think, 14 years old, they were all a little bit older, 4 or 5 years older than him. And we would go to a place in Robbinsdale, it was called the Youth Center, it was upstairs above the fire and police station in Robbinsdale, for Friday night dances, and the Coachmen and the Torquays would play there, and Steve was one part of that band as well.
Bob, how about you? Who do you recall seeing in the early days as far as local bands?
I remember going out to the Ryan's Ballroom out of Bass Lake and hearing the Underbeats. And I heard the Trashmen at various places. I don't recall all the individual bands that I heard, but they were many places to go on any Saturday night and hear any number of bands. It was kind of a wonderful time when there was all the live music that we're missing today.
And you played guitar. Do you recall the very first guitar you purchased?
I started taking lessons when I was 12 at Schmidt Music in Robbinsdale, and I had a Harmony archtop at that time.
Do you recall the cost?
I don't think it was any more than about $25. Okay. And it wasn't one of the real cheap ones at the time, so guitars were a lot less money back then.
Art, how about you? Do you recall the first bass guitar you purchased?
Framus, I think was the name of it. It's a hollow body, very thin neck. Got it at H&R Music on Douglas Drive in 36, which is now, I think, a Tropical Fish store. And played that one. I had a cheaper one before that. Can't remember what it was. Might have been a Harmony. And then bought the Framus, which is a hollow bit, which was kind of in the pictures that we brought up as the bass that I was playing.
And were you listening to KDWB or WDGY?
That's a tough one. I think I go back and forth, to be real honest. I don't think I was probably a channel surfer back way back when, because I think I go back between the both of them.
Well, I know I was a channel surfer because I didn't like every song I heard, and if I had one I didn't like, I'd flip to the other channel.
And what time period was it when you decided to put a band together?
We'd been our probably sophomore year at the University of Minnesota in 1966. Through friends I knew at Robbinsdale, met another Robbinsdale alumni that I did not know in high school because it was such a big school, who was taking guitar lessons, and I don't know, maybe listening to the radio somewhere, Kaufman Union, whatever, singing along with the song. We thought we sounded pretty good together, and so his brother was taking drum lessons and he was taking guitar lessons, so I thought, well, I'll learn to play bass.
And who was this person?
Rick Civilla was the rhythm guitar player, and his brother Paul Civilla was the drummer. Paul was a year younger than I. Rick was Robbinsdale class of 65, as well as Bob and I. His younger brother was Robbinsdale 66, I think.
So you guys start playing together, or practicing together at least. Where do you practice?
In Rick's basement to start out. His parents were very accommodating. We go down there. And, you know, really when you start practicing, what you're really doing is just kind of fooling around with a few songs and trying to get it together and looking. And you really don't know what you're doing. You're playing in the thing. It was really fun. We'd spend whole Sunday afternoons, you know, in the winter, just down there. And then the decision was made that we needed to add a lead guitar player because, of course, Rick was just learning and wasn't proficient enough for lead. We definitely needed that, and I think that's when Bob came into the picture.
Bob, what time frame did you come into the band?
I think we discussed it, and wasn't it winter of 66?
December.
I had played off and on in garage bands with friends ever since I can remember. Like I say, I started playing when I was 12. We met at the University of Minnesota. We met each other in the study hall at Kaufman Union and started talking about music, and they told me they were playing, and I said, yeah, I play, and one thing led to another, and I was asked to join the band.
Didn't you somewhere about have your guitar on campus, and Rick and you got together something?
Yeah, I brought the guitar to the university one day, and Rick and I went off to an office on the second floor of Kaufman Union and played a little bit, and they invited me to join.
It was nice somebody could play a whole song.
Now, did you guys know each other at Robbinsdale High School?
No, did not.
We had a graduating class of 800.
900, actually.
Was it 900?
907, yeah.
So we didn't know each other, but we graduated in the same class.
There certainly were a large number of musicians to come out of Robbinsdale High School. What was going on back then?
I think the Trashmen really was the seed to begin with. And also to the Underbeats, because Rod Eaton, the drummer in the Underbeats, was a Robbinsdale 64, I think, if I'm maybe 63, graduate. And so consequently, since they were Robbinsdale alumni, they would play at Robbinsdale for our sock hops when we were young. And of course, you know, you're a young guy, you're seeing them out there playing, and you're watching all the girls watch them play. And so there's one way, either become an athlete or become a musician. And with 900 guys out there, there's too many athletes and very few musicians. So I think everybody wanted
odds
to be a musician.
Better.
The odds were better, right? Anybody be a musician. So, but then that's Brian. And even by the time before we got out of high school, there were already two groups that were forming, just simply Robbinsdale members. Doubling the Do-Rights with Danny Libby, Dan Munson. Well, names escape me, but they were Robbinsdale boys. And then another one called the Four Apostles, which was Mark Robbie and Ray Molina, and who taught Steve Miller, actually, how to play lead guitar play, and a number of other guys. And they were all Robbinsdale guys. And they were playing at Ryan's already. And then once we got out of his school, the Still Roving came out of Robbinsdale. Of course, Steve Miller came out of Robbinsdale. The Youngsters came out of Robbinsdale. A lot of groups.
All right. So you start playing with Bob here now, and we're into 67 now, correct?
Yes.
And you're still practicing, and what type of music are you playing at this point?
Whatever we could to begin with.
Whatever was on the radio?
No, whatever we were capable of playing. I mean, you don't start out playing the Beatles, you know.
Yeah.
We start out with Edie's stuff, Under the Boardwalk. I think we even did a Dylan song, and I can't remember what it was. Eventually did some easy Beatles. And I think basically developed into an R&B group, really. Did a lot of rhythm and blues. So you go out, when we weren't playing, we'd go out, hear the dances, and you hear somebody say, oh, we should do that song. And that's really how a lot of it go. Or if you happen to, I think in 1968, the Randy and I, the trumpet player, and keyboard player, went down to the Bahamas, and of course they're playing a little bit of music earlier than we were back here, and we heard a Sam and Dave song down there called I Thank You. Well, of course, you come back around, you learn it right away because they're not playing here. Nobody hears it, so you get a jump. But most of the time, you go out and you hear the underbeats or the Del Counts do a song that you weren't doing. You kind of wanted to do it, too.
The rhythm and blues music was a little easier instrumentally. Most of the work was in the harmony and the vocals. And so it was a little easier to get started on.
Good point. That was true, yeah. Because some of the rock and roll stuff was more intricate, especially the guitar work.
Yeah.
When I first started, it was a little more difficult.
All right, so how long do you practice, and when do you come up with the name The Sensations?
Boy, I wish I could remember where the name came. I don't know how that came from. And the funny thing about it is that years later, now with Google and everything, and you look through stuff, I was putting together a song list to, we have a reunion band, all the guys that went to Robbinsdale. So many musicians came out that we form a reunion band and play at our reunions just with Robbinsdale Class of 65 guys. So I was researching to find some songs to play, and I came across the fact that there was a Sensations group, and I never even knew at the time when we took the name. We thought we'd come up with this whole great name at the time, and nobody else had it. And here there was a group out there at that time using that name. They weren't a big name. They had a top 40 hit that maybe got into the top 30s, and that was about it. But
you mean a band from outside of the Twin Cities?
Yeah, right.
They were in Philly or somewhere.
Yes, but we didn't know that at the time. We thought we had a brand new name that nobody else had. Don't know how we came up with the name, to be real honest with you. But as far as practicing, we get together mostly Sunday afternoons, I think, through the winter. And then we decided that we were going to enter the Teen Fair Minnesota State Amateur Band Contest at the State Fair in 67. So that summer, June, July, and August, we practiced just about every night at this Pepelo Industries, a friend of Bob's, you can explain about, and getting ready for the State Fair.
Bob, how did you run into this Pepelo Industries?
My younger brother, who was a year younger than me, had a part-time job at this Pepelo company. They were a circuit board manufacturer.
Where were they located?
They were in Crystal, Minnesota, right off 42nd Avenue. They're no longer there, but anyway, he was a jazz guitar player from the 40s.
And his name was what?
George Pepelo. And so he had an interest in young musicians and was willing to help out any young musicians who were trying to form a band and whatever. And so he helped us out with speaker cabinets for the PA system and a location to practice.
What kind of speaker cabinets did he have?
He designed his own cabinets. They were, as Art had described earlier, sort of an early Bose system. They were 6 feet tall, had two rows of 6-inch speakers.
Not typical for the time.
No, they weren't typical for the time, but they had a very clear sound, and I think was one of the things that helped us is that our vocals were very clear.
Most all the speaker cabinets at the time were flat-faced. These were V-shaped, with the speakers coming out the side, and again, the whole Bose concept of a bunch of little speakers instead of a big speaker really provided clarity for the vocals I don't think a lot of other groups had, and I think that was one of the things that made us sound so good. Of course, the other thing was that your ears came out a lot more clear too, but but I think it was the clarity of the system that was, and I often wondered what happened to George, and because he let us use the speakers the whole time we had it. They were fantastically light, portable, clean, and a lot of people would ask us what we were using. And interesting what happened. Well, maybe in my wildest dream, Bose bought him out, and he retired somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know. I know I heard he died a few years back. In fact, I ran into a guy one time that had a pair of those in his garage.
Really?
And he didn't know where he got them. He got them at a garage sale somewhere.
Okay.
So the early band has their first job at the State Fair. Do you remember anything about the gig?
Not much more than being nervous. I remember there weren't a lot of people there either. It seemed like maybe 40, 50, 60 people.
Yeah, I guess I was sort of pleased at the fact it wasn't a huge crowd.
Yeah.
Was it outdoors or in
outdoors,
one of the tents?
It was in what they call Teen Village, which is, I think they call it Frontier Village or something like that. It's over by the campus on Como Avenue side. You go in there now and they have all kinds of arts and trinkets, and the country western bands play up there now, but on the same stage. And I don't know how many bands were in it, and to be honest with you, I couldn't tell you who took first place. I know we took third, and that would have been 1967. And but I really wish I knew who took first and second, but I don't know if there's even any way to find out. But
so that kicks off the Sensations playing live.
Yep.
And did you get a booking agent, or did you
book your own gigs? We booked ourselves. Actually, what happened was that because we took third, unbeknownst to us, we got to play in this concert. We didn't get paid for it. We just got to be included in a kind of a band jam at the Minneapolis Armory, I think in October of 67, that included the top three winners, including us, the Del Counts, the Flippers, and Paul Revere and the Raiders, which was really the first big. I can remember standing backstage and looking out at the curtain and seeing just the sea of people and going, what have we done?
It was a little intimidating.
You know, and then coming out, the first song we played was Buckingham's Don't You Care. And I can remember that I could not stop my leg from shaking the whole time the first song. And when we got done with the song, we just got a very, very positive, warm, wonderful response. And from then on in, it was no problem.
What other places did you play in town?
We were mostly out of town. Because we booked ourselves, we wound up doing like Parkway Ballroom, Foley, Minnesota, Lakeside Ballroom, a lot of Princeton Armory, Cambridge Armory. A lot of the, we kind of got in a thing, like a circuit like Cambridge, Onamia, Princeton, Minnesota, just for whatever reason. Every band's got a little following where, and you kind of go, and some people hear you at the Parkway, and they, oh, you should come up and play at the, you know, this way, and then you know, you kind of go up there and you call them, and oh, yeah, we heard it. And getting in the Twin Cities was really hard because unless you went through Marsh or one of the booking agencies, which we didn't do, it's tough to get into the local club. And plus, there was just so many bands.
Well, I also remember that it seemed to me that you had to have a union card to play in town at that time.
Well, we were union.
Well, we eventually became union, but first started, we weren't. So we didn't think we were allowed to play in town until we got our union card.
So that happened eventually, you joined the union?
Yeah.
And then at that point, did you play in town more?
We played some stuff in town. We played at Prudential Corporations, what was it?
The Prudential Company had a Christmas party or something, and they had a full orchestra playing plus us. And we were quite pleased that we were alternating, but we were quite pleased that they liked us just as well as the orchestra.
What did you have for equipment on stage? Did you use a sound guy? How did that work?
We had a mixer that we fed into a Fender head and then drove those speakers with it.
I think we all played through Fender amps. We had Sennheiser microphones. I think Pearl drums were the type of drums that Paul had. I think the Pearl.
Yeah, I think so. Correctly. At that time, there weren't a lot of fancy sound systems, you know, the mixer boards like we have today. And we just had kind of a simple mixer with, I think, half a dozen volume knobs, and we just used that and fed it into a Bandmaster head.
Sometimes ignorance is bliss, too, you know.
Did you guys buy matching outfits to wear on stage?
Yes, we did. That was kind of the thing of the time. Paul Revere and the Raiders were, of course, outlandish, but I think one of our uniforms was white pants, yellow shirts, and blue sport coats, if I remember.
Yes.
Yeah, and, you know, the Beach Boys kind of look. Just kind of pre-long hair. You know, and once long hair started coming out, most of the bands started dressing whatever.